begin to really understand that your response is the only thing that you're in control of. And you begin to understand that your response is not just like the thing that I might see you do a cycle, but your response is also the thoughts you're having. Your response is also where you're putting your attention.
Awe Genge, this is Mental Matters, hosted by Asako Toto.
What led you to pursuing career in psychology and helping people?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I grew up in a home that very much encouraged putting others before myself. And I think of my nature anyway, I love to nurture and take care of other people. And it just seemed to be a really great alignment in terms of wanting to help people, as well as always being, I'm an Aquarius, a true Aquarius, where I'm always in my head a lot. So being up in my thoughts, knowing that I love education, I went to an undergrad college, not knowing that I was actually going to study psychology. We had to check off a major, I think by our sophomore year, and I didn't know what I wanted to declare. So I did what everyone else did, and I declared psychology as my major. And come to find out, I fell in love with it. But by the time we graduated and I got my bachelor's, I didn't know what it was that I wanted to do with it. So I kept studying. So I went and got my master's at Columbia University, studied psychology for a little bit longer. And then I still didn't know what I wanted to do with my major. So I continued studying and I went and got my PhD. And by the time I was done with my PhD, there was no way, both financially and just emotionally, I was drained from, you know, continuing to take in. That I decided to practice psychology. I loved the energy and the purity of kids, so I thought I wanted to work with kids. I worked with a school board of education in Greenwich, Connecticut, decided that it was just not my up my alley. So I started instead working at a private practice, working with adults, and I quickly fell in love with being able to work with not the kids directly, but to be able to impact the caregivers that work with kids. And then that slowly transformed as I began to evolve on my spiritual and my heart journey. I quickly realized that I will continue to evolve and being okay with accepting that the change will continue to happen. So I did what I always do best, is I look for challenges and I look for experiences that really do help me to stretch myself. So I've done everything from working with kids to adults, clinical psychology, counseling psychology, positive psychology. I've done all of it. But Asako, what you said at the beginning of our call today, when you mentioned that, you know, there isn't as much of a stigma anymore, but knowing that there is definitely a stigma around taking care of our mental health is something that I've been passionate about. And more specifically lately, it's about this journey not being just a psychological or an emotional journey, but really integrating the spiritual aspect of ourselves as well.
So why do you think that people don't want to take care of their mental health?
I think there are many reasons. Either A, we're culturally brought up to always focus on taking care of other people, so we don't ever take a look at taking care of ourselves. Another, like you mentioned, there's definitely a stigma, especially in specific cultures on specific roles. So if you're a male in the Western society, you're supposed to be strong. You're not supposed to, you know, men or boys aren't supposed to cry. You know, we have all of these cultural expectations of what it means to be accepted or what it means to be a good, overall, healthy, resilient person. And I think a lot of that does a disservice for us, especially because we take in all of these cultural or acculturations, if you will, expectations, without really discerning or asking ourselves if that's something that we feel aligned with.
When I was going through your website, something that drew my attention is the fact that you are also a coach, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. So how does that interact? How do that work? Because according to my knowledge, psychology digs deep into the past and coaching digs deep into the future. So how do you correlate those two things?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I am a licensed psychologist by trade, and I went and studied in different things like hypnosis and positive psychology that really had me thinking about my approach when I work with clients, especially one-on-one clients. And the therapy piece of it, if you think of a number line, if you're standing at zero, you have all of the negative number line to your left and all of the positive numbers to your right. The thing about therapy is that, like you said, a psycho, it does look into the past a lot more than coaching would typically, whereas coaching does look forward into the future, helping you to set goals. But we'll find that when we, let's say, for example, we hire a coach and we want to work on, you know, losing weight or getting this dream job or moving to a different location, whatever those specific goals are that we have, we tend to find in that work that there is a lot of stuff from the past, because that's where a lot of our limiting beliefs are stemming from, that really get in the way of us being able to live a fulfilling life where we're actualizing our potential. And so even in the coaching arena, if you will, in that domain, you will look at things that shaped who you are. So that means you do look at your past. The biggest differentiating factor between therapy and coaching is that therapists and your work in therapy will actually look at specifically healing different experiences that you've had in the past, not for the sake of being able to meet a goal, but for the sake of becoming a more whole, integrated person.
As a psychologist, what would you say are some most common challenges people struggle with in terms of mental health and this living with purpose?
What do clients struggle with most in terms of mental health and living a purpose? I think it is definitely this idea, the perspective or the perception that we have of ourselves. A lot of our past experiences will have taught us things that are not correct or aligned with who we truly are. And so these distortions, the frames or the lens that we are looking at ourselves and then this world, tend to be distorted. And when that is distorted, it's extremely difficult for us to know what our purpose is, because we do things. For example, me becoming a psychologist wasn't something that I did because it felt aligned with me. It was something that I did because A, I thought it was expected of me, right? I need to be smart. I need to get good grades. I need to take care of other people.
Definitely.
So A, we do that because we believe that we have to meet these certain expectations that we forget or maybe don't even take the time to acknowledge isn't our own expectations. And so what happens is a lot of clients that come to see me end up taking all of this time, what they think climbing a ladder, they get to the top, they look down, they go, oh my gosh, I climbed the wrong ladder. I'm in the wrong place. So now they have to actually take the time to come back down the ladder and figure out where they need to go or what feels good to them, where they're supposed to be in terms of what really lights them up. And so they're right back at square one, but now having lost 5 years doing something that they thought they were supposed to be doing, but wasn't really aligned to them. So when it comes to mental health and purpose, it really truly for me, what I see with my clients when I'm doing one-on-one work is that there is a lot of self-esteem issues because they are using the wrong lens to view themselves in this world. And it really defeats our sense of agency, our sense of trust in ourselves, our ability to accept or love ourselves. So all of those things really do get in the way when we want to live a joyful, fulfilling life.
Going back to that thing that you said, when a certain person that has climbed this ladder and realizing that they climbed the wrong ladder. Actually, I've come across people that are afraid to start over, are afraid to start off of starting. And as you said, that you've lost, let's say, around five years, the whole 5 years, they are afraid to start over. And I feel like starting over, it's a blessing in disguise. In a case of you are studying new things and you definitely were gonna create new connections, you're gonna create new friends, new relationships. So I feel like I agree with you towards that. And also one thing that as a psychologist One thing that I always want to, whenever I interview a psychologist, is the fact of theory. Because last week I had an interview with, also I think she was a psychologist. So I asked the question of, is therapy worth it?
100%. There is no greater journey and no greater path than seeking to know oneself. And that's essentially what I do when I sit with a client, is to help them to see themselves, to know themselves. And I do truly believe that at the top, if you think of a big umbrella, it really is this journey of getting to know yourself through self-actualization, self-discernment, self-reflection. And there are multiple ways of doing that. You can do that sitting with someone else in therapy. You can do that with journaling. You can do that with meditations. You can do that with taking a full year off and going on a solo trip around the world. It really does boil down to, do I know who I am? Who am I? What am I? And for a lot of people, therapy works.
You mentioned self-actualization. I would like to refer it to self-awareness. So my question is along those lines. So what role does self-awareness and clarity about one's values play in living a more purposeful life? How can people work on gaining more clarity?
Living a purposeful life.
Yes.
Okay, that's fantastic. I love that question. I think it really gets to the simplicity of what purpose is. A lot of us think that life purpose is something that is destined in the stars, where it's given to us as a set of instructions of some sort. And I don't see purpose in that way. For me, purpose is truly getting to understand who you are. And the game of life really gets in the way of us understanding who we are. So we're born dependent on adults or caregivers to tell us how this world works, to tell us who we are, to tell us where our values are. And on top of all of that, we're then taught that there is this thing called life purpose. You're here to do something great and have this life mission. But essentially, all of life purpose is dancing in this game of life and understanding and figuring out. It really truly does feel like a game when we're in the flow of it, where it's like, oh yes, that is how I know myself to be, and that doesn't align with me, and that is not what I believe myself to be. And so if you don't know who you are, then all you're doing is you're playing a role in someone else's movie instead of being your own movie. And I don't think you can have your own movie unless you know who you are, unless you have self-awareness.
And also, still on the conversation of purpose, many people feel lost or lack confidence in determining their life purpose. What are some ways someone can start connecting with their inner truth and unique talents/skills?
That's a great question. The first thing that we need to do is understand that there is no right way of doing it and no wrong way of doing it. When we watch a little child playing a game, so let's say he's or she's sitting there playing with blocks, there's no wrong way to do it. They're just absorbed in the activity of something. And so when you become absorbed in this game of life and you truly begin to connect to your heart, the whispers that your heart are giving you, it's like following breadcrumbs. It's not to say that there is a right way to follow the breadcrumbs. It's all just asking yourself the right question, not the right, I don't want to call it the right questions, asking yourself the questions that aligns to what makes me light up, what helps me to feel alive. And when you're at that point, when you can ask those questions without self-judgment, and you can accept every aspect of you, including the experiences that really like put a dent in your ego, for example, when you can get to that point where you're beginning to just accept it with no attachment whatsoever to the experience or to the results, I think then you can begin to indirectly build self-confidence. I don't think self-confidence in your purpose is something that you directly pursue. It's just something that happens as a byproduct.
As a psychologist, would you say that can Would you say trauma can lead you to on finding your purpose slash talent?
Oh, wow. I've never been asked that question before. I think what trauma does is it helps us to really get to the point of understanding our resilience, understanding love, and understanding trust. I don't know that having a specific trauma leads people to have a specific purpose. So, for example, if I had a sexual assault when I was younger, and therefore, as a job, I am a therapist working with individuals who were victims of sexual assault or survivors of a sexual assault, I don't think it works like directly one-to-one correlation in the way that we might think trauma might shape our purpose. I do, however, believe that, like any experience, whether it's traumatic or whether it's amazing and full of love and light, I do believe that every experience gives us the opportunity to question what our values are. So, my top three values right now, Aseko, are authenticity, kindness, and grace. I look for grace in everything in all of my world around me. I intend to show up with an attitude of being kind to others. And my intention is to truly align myself to being authentic, to being who I am, to accepting who I am, and to living my truth. But those three things were not my top three values 5 years ago. 5 years ago, I had a different set of values. But that's because I've had different experiences that have shaped my values. My values that are at the top right now very much do fuel my purpose, but they're not what my purpose
The reason why I asked that specific question, I have this belief that I have an unattended trauma that I have had in the past, and this unattended trauma has made me do s different things, from writing a book to self-publishing it to starting this podcast to so many things that, as you said earlier, that the fact that we don't look after our, there's this stigma around, we don't look after our own health, mental health. So through me attending my own mental health is the fact that I have created this podcast to help those people who, I would say, how can I put it, who are have experienced the same thing or a different thing. For example, if a guest on the podcast comes, they share their story, so some people might relate to that certain story. And you mentioned something about past experiences when it came to your values. So how can things like for example, the unattended trauma, past experiences, and unconscious belief hold people back from being their authentic selves?
Oh, wow. So, when we have unattended trauma or unprocessed past experiences, whether or not you want to consider them traumatic. So, for example, when I was a little girl, I was up on stage. I had a performance. I came off the stage. It was a group performance. And I remember being pulled off the stage and going, "Why were you giggling to yourself at the beginning? You looked so foolish." But when I would get nervous, I would giggle and I couldn't help it because I was really nervous before performing. And I remember having that one particular instance. In hindsight, now I know that that really truly shaped my trajectory in terms of what I chose to do, what I chose not to do. But when we have unattended past experiences, whether it's good or bad, we don't integrate or assimilate parts of us, especially if they're constricting or fear-based. So if we have a constricting experience or a fear-based experience like a trauma, what happens is we splinter off a part of ourselves and we disown that part of ourselves because it's either not safe or it creates a lot of shame. And when those two things happen, what we do is we live a life almost like partially a person, fully the person that we are meant to become or that we are in our essence and our core. And so I mean, scientists, neurocognitive scientists have actually shown that 95% of our behaviors are unconscious. So if 95% of the way that we show up and what we do and what we say is unconscious, what really helps us, what behooves us, is to actually look at past experiences that have created limiting beliefs, that have created this particular map that we're using to navigate our world, in order for us to identify whether or not we like the way we're showing up, whether or not we want to create a new set of patterns that maybe that would help us to live more joyfully or live more forgivingly. I don't know if that's a word, forgivingly, but it really does. If you consider when you consider that 95% of the way we show up is truly under the surface, it, I mean, why not? Like, I can't imagine doing something, anything else that would create a life full of fulfillment for me.
I want to shift to, I don't want to end this episode without talking about your book. So I've seen that your subtitle is Master Your Fears and Live Life on Purpose. How does one master their fears as something that I would say is not something that you can wake up overnight and say, no, I have mastered my fears. How do you do that?
Excellent question. So these fears are hardwired into us. We have three human fears. We have the fear of failure, fear of abandonment, and fear of being irrelevant. The best way that we can, because it's hardwired, it's in our DNA, it's not something that we can just like rip out, like Velcro, like rip it off. Because it's the way that we are wired in this physical human container, what we need to do is understand that these fears are based on six human needs. The six core human needs that we have tend to be paired up, and each pair are what you call polarities or opposites. If one of the pair is misaligned or imbalanced, if there is an imbalance, what happens is that that fear will definitely show up in your life. So, for example, the fear of failure is very much based on this human need of needing to be in control. We need to be in control all the time, but we also have this human need to be cared for. A lot of the times we just want to let it go and just let someone else take care of our, you know, making our dinner or, you know, taking care of that meeting that we are always responsible for leading. So when we have these two human fears, I need to be in control, but I also need to be cared for. When you can learn to balance the two, this fear of failing tends to be, it's like a monster. Like you just have to keep feeding it once in a while so that it doesn't, you know, turn around and attack you. But it is just hardwired within us to have these fears. But we also, as human beings, have these human needs for each of the three fears that if we learn to balance it, we learn to train that monster, so to speak. What happens is you'll have a well-behaved, I guess, monster. I started calling it a monster, so we're going to stick to that analogy. But you have this really well-behaved, either it could be a friend or a foe, but this really well-behaved fear in your life that you can flow with. It's not something that you completely get rid of because you will always have a fear of failure. No matter how successful, how loved you are, or no matter where you are in life, that fear will always be there. But if you know what to do to balance the two human needs for each of those fears, then those fears don't overtake your agency, your sense of creating your life in the way that you intend to.
When you spoke about always being in control, I feel like I related a lot with that because in overall, when I do my podcast, whenever I do, is the fact that I always want to be right. I always want things to go by my way. And if I involve people in a certain project, even here, I'm in Varsity now, even when I'm in when we have a group assignment, I rather do the assignment alone and not involve others, even though it's a group assignment. So when you spoke about it being always in control, I really related with that. And also, my question is still on this thing of being in control. You mentioned that you need to feel it a little bit, a little bit, a little bit. How would you say define a little bit when it comes to feeding this as the energy this certain month?
Yeah, that fear. So it really is like going to the gym. You don't go to the gym for a week and you're like, oh yes, I love how I feel in my body. I'm done and never have to work out again. You constantly have to put in the work. And so it's about constantly putting, go ahead.
No, I was agreeing with you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So it really is this aspect. It's not having this human journey is not just about the physical body, it's not just about the mental body, but it's also about the spiritual body. And the spiritual body requires us to constantly put in the work as well. If you find the work engaging and fun, it becomes effortless. It's kind of like some people like to do yoga, for example. Other people like to run. Some people like CrossFit. You have to find a way to be able to put in the work, specifically about being in the context of needing to be in control. It's not about controlling the outcome or any of the environment or situations you find yourself in life. It's about knowing where your sense of agency really, really comes from. So there is a famous psychiatrist and author called Viktor Frankl. And one of the things that he really teaches is that the only thing that you are ever in control of is your sense, or not your sense of agency, but your response to something. When you begin to really understand that your response is the only thing that you're in control of, and you begin to understand that your response is not just like the thing that I might see you do a cycle, but your response is also the thoughts you're having. Your response is also where you're putting your attention. Then you begin to realize it's always an inside job. So anything that you do on the inside, the outside, your reality has to reflect that. It's just the law of the universe. Just like if I throw a ball up in the air, it's gonna come back down as long as we're on this planet.
Before we close off, I see that we are running out of time. So, what are your closing words to the audience?
Oh, wow. I didn't have a chance to think about this. I would say that so I've struggled growing up with feeding myself first. I think the biggest thing that comes up for me right now as I'm thinking about your question a second is that you can't give to others unless it's from your overflow. If you give to others when it's not just from your cup overflowing, that means you're going to end up with resentment, because we have a tendency to give to others and then subconsciously expect something in return. The only way we can circumnavigate that is to be able to give to others from our overflow. And I think the premise of that truly is you have to take care of yourself first. You have to learn to trust yourself, accept yourself, love yourself. And I think when we get that part in, like when we are constantly doing the work and we're showing up, then we have to give to others through overflow. It's just inevitable.
Thank you for all those words. So I just want to say thank you again. Thank you so much for being here, and also thank you for your time. And definitely, the audience will learning some things there. To mention a few, self-awareness, self-actualization, self-love, and also facing your fears is very important. As you've said, it's very important to face your fears. And no matter what way you think about it, those fears won't go away. Even when I was starting this podcast, I was afraid to start because I was doubting myself. When will I have success through this podcast? Will I have this thing, that and that and that? So thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate
Thank
you
you.
with your time. Thank you so much.
Ezekiel, can I actually change what I would like to part with? Because when you said that, it triggered something for me.
Okay, no problem. Okay.
You don't have to edit it. It's okay. It's just something that came up. I really like to share because you said you had mentioned the fear and showing up. The thing that we fear the most is the thing that we actually love. It's the thing that we are super passionate about on the inside. There is a kernel of truth in everything that we fear, that I truly do believe that whenever fear shows up, it's opportunity knocking at our door. So I thought that was something really cool to leave behind.